Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Plum Tree Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Bucherry, and it is Thursday, September 14th, just a few short days before BEA World. And today I am very fortunate to have with us a guest on the show, and we'll get to that guest in a moment. But in the meantime, let's wrap up the trivia question and ask this week's trivia question. So last week we talked about who was the original vice president of software development at Plum Tree Software. The answer to the question was John Hogan. He is an incredible leader and a great mentor to me, and I really enjoyed working under his team. He was the first, and now the next question, again sticking with the same theme, is going to be who was the next vice president of engineering for Plum Tree Software who followed John Hogan. I don't know if he's still there or not, but I won't give you any other hints. Let's leave it at that. Anyway, that's our trivia question for the week. And now on to our interview.
Today we have with us Eric Whitley, friend of the Plum Tree community, frequent contributor to the open source community, and a longtime Plum Tree customer. Eric, it's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Chris.
So let's just jump right in. I give you a very short introduction. I'm sure you could give us a much longer one. What's your background like? How did you get into Plum Tree, and what was your career path before you got to Plum Tree?
So I was kind of always a geek, but started being a geek for profit when I was a student at Northwestern. I was in the psychology department, actually. It was in cognitive psychology. It was a cognitive sciences department, which is a mix of like cognitive psychology and linguistics. Was working there and had a job on the side that was technology consulting, working for like server administration, stuff like that. And then transitioned over into actually an app dev group in what they call the learning technologies group, which is kind of like exploratory technology and teaching. And okay. I actually had a rare opportunity to work for the Chicago Historical Society and the U.S. Supreme Court doing web apps.
Oh, wow.
So it was a lot of fun.
And so that's where you got into web development for the first time.
Yeah, and actually on the side there, while I had that job and I was doing research and I was a student, my roommates and I all had a company that was actually custom web application development. They all worked for Next at that point. So we were, I was kind of surrounded by it.
You're talking about the very next step that got bought by Apple and became OS X?
Web objects and all that other stuff.
Oh, my goodness. I remember I had a Next computer in my college dorm room.
You were lucky to have it.
I remember playing pool on it at a pool game.
Everybody loved lip service and all other stuff, too.
Yeah, definitely.
So we actually did a lot of really cool stuff. And I will admit that they did a hell of a lot more programming than I ever did. I was kind of more on the surface level of stuff because I didn't understand most of what they talked about. But it was cool because it was, you were totally immersed. And then coming out of that, I went and actually did consulting in web application development, which was, nobody was really still doing that at that point. Did that for a couple of years, was lucky enough to work with a bunch of really good people. And then I went on to work for kind of an interactive digital marketing advertising type organization. Really did a lot of good stuff with them, and then kind of stuck around with that group of companies. Where I am now, and now I am lucky enough to continue working with ALUI, doing kind of a combination of all of that kind of stuff, really focused on trying to provide value to the business.
Well, that's a perfect segue for me. Now that you mentioned ALUI, what's your biggest success ever in working with ALUI, or formerly known as Plum Tree?
Wow. I have to be kind of careful on not naming the specifics with that, but I think the biggest thing is really that we've been able to do a lot more kind of rapid application development using the framework, because you don't have to write a lot of the underlying stuff anymore. You get so many kind of things for free.
Very true.
That we've been able to really rip into, hey, we've got a business problem and we need to do something. And by the way, it needs to integrate in with all the rest of the other existing applications. And typically you go, wow, I'm going to need to rewrite everything from scratch.
So I assume you're talking a little bit about Plum Tree Studio?
Well, I mean, just using even the portal as a harness to host the applications, leveraging profile components, doing kind of on-the-glass manipulation of session information and pass that information between portlets where they're actually really disconnected pieces of applications. Otherwise, I don't know exactly how you'd approach the problem and get it done very quickly.
True,
if you had to release a monolithic app every time somebody came to you and wanted some sort of an enhancement or something, it would be very problematic. And considering the type of organization we are in, we tend to operate in something that I think frightens Plum Tree a little bit, and that's kind of why we've had a very good relationship with them, is more of kind of an internal ASP. So we offer application services back to the business community. We really delegate out a lot of the administration things to them. So in terms of our ability to rapidly respond, we've been very successful just because of that element of it. People come to us and they're like, we need this application to do this in this way, integrate with the process, and by the way, it has to leverage all the existing security for the rest of the enterprise. We need analytics, we need those other things, and we just go, okay, you know, let's build the app. We don't have to worry about anything else.
So you're truly talking SOA before SOA was even really a popular buzzword.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not just talking about it, you're living it.
Well, I hope so, and I hope in a positive way.
Definitely. So have you guys leveraged all the Plumtree products in the suite, Content Server, Studio Server, et cetera, or just mostly the portal and your own custom development?
Well, kind of a mix of the above. We haven't really rolled Studio out too much, only because we're a little concerned with trying to figure out exactly where things are going with that. And honestly, there's certain elements of that where Studio as a tool, I think, has a very good value, but it's contained in its own, it is its own application. What people don't necessarily get is when you want to extend Studio, you really don't want to do that in a way that is going to compromise the availability, the integrity of what Studio provides.
That's so true. In fact, you really can't customize Studio outside of the fact that you can make any custom application you want virtually. But then once you make that, you're stuck in that framework.
Exactly.
That's, I think, the product's one downside, but the rest of it is all upside. I love that product, and I think that according to the latest roadmap I heard from BEA, Studio is going to become what they're calling now Builder. They were calling it Holland for a while. First they're calling it Builder, then they're calling it Holland. Now they're calling it Builder again. But I think there's going to be a big component of Builder or a big component of Studio inside of Builder.
Well, I think the suite as a concept makes a lot of sense.
Definitely.
I think it's just really cool to be able to do those things kind of ad hoc. I mean, that's probably the number one request we actually get that we really have a hard time fielding is, I need to be able to do an ad hoc data entry form that has, you know, a non-fixed structured database that then I can query back, and I got to be able to assign things to people and get a status on it.
Right, and you can write that, of course, but that's code you don't want to maintain and code that's going to be stovepiped and just...
Exactly.
Just code. You know, I'm a developer by trade, and I don't like writing code. I mean, I love writing code, but when my customers say, do you want something, or we want something, and I always think of one way I can get around it without writing code.
Exactly.
Because that is my goal, is to...
And, you know,
use out-of-the-box components whenever possible, right?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of it, is I may understand how the working parts move, and I may know how to sit down and code, but at the same time, I understand that the business doesn't necessarily find any value in my coding as opposed to being able to rapidly deploy something that gets them 80% there immediately and give a huge value back to the organization. If
exactly.
I can use something to basically visually associate a process with a
right.
data container, with an access mechanism or something, that's exactly what I want to do. I don't want to build this stuff.
Right, without the maintenance cost or any of the headaches of writing code.
Exactly.
And it's not the writing code that's hard, it's everything else that comes after, deploying it, maintaining it, et cetera.
Exactly.
So while we're on that topic, what has gone wrong? Have you ever had a really, maybe if you've only narrowed down to one thing, but what has gone awfully wrong in a Plumtree deployment, and how did you get yourself out of it?
Well, I will say that when I first came on board dealing with the product, it had been customized, actually. And that, I realize, was prior to my coming on the team, but that took us a while to actually dig ourselves out of. I think if you're going to customize specifically prior to 6.0, there are things you could do to the product you probably really don't want to do. I saw people customize like native ASP or JSP pages, those kinds of things, and
right.
you're setting yourself up for a complete nightmare later.
So you started on a pre-5.0 portal, like a 4.5
yeah.
portal.
4.0, then 4.5, and 4.5 WS up through WS SP3. And
wow.
if you start tweaking pages and they come out with hotfixes, you're investing yourself back in support where, honestly, it's going to take away from revenue-generating projects.
So out of the box was not really out of the box, was it?
Right. No, never. Never, right? And so
right.
that's kind of the thing. With 6.0, we tried to intentionally dig ourselves out of that. The one thing I will say is that, and again, 6.0 fixed this, is it used to be this nasty little thing where if for some reason your back-end LDAP repository had issues, you could fail replication and delete all your users. I had that happen once.
Wow.
That was unpleasant, but that's
why. So you lost all your My Pages?
I lost all my users.
Which includes My Pages, right?
Well, I lost everything.
Wow.
I mean, they couldn't log in. I lost all the profile data. I lost all the group association.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I lost the portal. So that was a quick recovery, thank God. We had database backups, and the last snapshot was 6 hours prior to that issue. But...
So what's the lesson you learned from that, other than obviously back up your database?
Well, for one, I mean, that's kind of the only concern that I wind up having with this whole service-oriented approach is, one, you really have to know how things are going to talk together.
Right.
And you have to plan for the worst. If you assume that things are always going to be up, I mean, it's kind of like you have to assume a lot more control than you really want to
Right.
You know, really worry about what happens if I don't have data. What happens if the data is structured in a way they don't expect? What happens if I get null data? You have to consider all those scenarios. And you may have the best service in the world that processes data once it gets into your service, but, you know, there's all these other dependencies out there.
That's totally true. In fact, it's true when you're writing code as well. You always got to consider something, well, what if someone pulls out the network cable? You can't assume the network's always there.
You exactly.
Know, and so on and so forth. It's the same exact thing. So getting into more of a discussion of futures, if you were in charge of BID right now, if you were actually Mark Karjas, what would you do? What would you put into the next version of Aqualogic Interaction, and why?
I'm going to put on a mix of my customer hat, and then I'm going to try to envision myself as that role. So I'm going to try to not kind of just whine at things. You know, honestly, I think that the thing I'd try to do is try to figure out where the market has needs and where the portal really lends itself. So try to find that sweet spot.
Right.
And then really pursue it. I mean, make yourself the best in that possible way. So one of the things that I keep bumping into is something we have a very hard time dealing with is it could even be something that's independent of the quote-unquote product but has to do with the actual packaging and deployment of the product, which is give us a very clear picture of how the product can be useful based on specific business domain scenarios. So, you know, you want to set up your own internal departmental intranet. Help us figure out how to best apply the combination of all those tools to make it very powerful and very applicable to my particular needs today. And I realize that's very difficult to do because, you know, I'm going to use the BEA Think Liquid. It's so fluid
right.
that it can fill any container you give it. So what we always get dinged on is, you know, people come to us and like, well, what can I have in a portal? And we turn around and say, well, what do you need? What is your business problem?
I've been in that exact discussion.
I respect that. I mean, that is absolutely the right way to approach it, but 9 times out of 10, people can't visualize an end state. You kind of have to assist them.
True. So you're thinking more things along the lines of, like, hyper?
Yeah. You know what? Honestly, figure out how to package it up. I mean, maybe not something as a formal product, but even a kind of a twist on how they sell the suite that they've got and help us figure out, like, collab, right? Very powerful. The portal, very powerful.
Right.
How do I implement something in, goes back to the, you know, the department work group situation where I can allow a work group manager to manage a set of communities for the user base, utilizing collab, you know, deployed in a community and make it very successful based off of very common needs. And I'm not talking about like industry specific stuff, but really try to figure out the basic scenarios in which a portal is intended to apply itself and make it excel. I mean, make it very hard for me to fail by giving me essentially a deployment roadmap for it.
True. That's a really good point. And I think this is not a new idea, I mean, by any means. Siebel is doing this with all of their vertical industry verticals. Of course, they were acquired by Oracle now, so I guess I should say Oracle is doing this. But I guess my point is Plumtree has tried. This is not something that they haven't tried to do. Back when I was working there, they developed this group called the Solution Center, and that was supposed to be the group that would build out these very solutions, these actually portal-in-a-box kind of things that would apply to the real business problems that you're trying to solve, and not so much be just an empty box that you put in and have to
right.
fill up, you know? And this idea actually became more of like, well, let's just write as many gadgets, as many portlets as we can. And then that actually worked out well. We wrote the Siebel portlets, SAP, Exchange, a bunch of stuff. Excel came out of that. Then it all fizzled, and
right.
now there's no vision in that regard, as far as I can tell. I'd really like to see a vision in terms of how they're going to continue support for integration products and how they're going to do what you said, to build solutions and to help the customers build solutions. And I think that's a big part of where we fit into the picture, both you and myself, even though we work for different people. Is helping customers figure out how to build those various solutions. So in light of the roadmap, you've heard the updates. I assume you were on that call from last week.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts about maintaining two portal brands and how that's going to fit into portal
you know,
strategy?
I got to be honest with you. I'm trying to be very fair because it's only been a year, and not even really, right? But I do need to think they need to present a very clear, like, hey, here's this product, here's where we're going, here's this business need, here's where we're going. I wanted to make it very abundantly clear to people because it's very difficult for us to understand, and as a result, it's very difficult for us to invest
right.
in solutions when we don't know if they're going to be there or if the process is going to change. And again, I sympathize. I mean, it's really difficult to do what they're doing, but I keep thinking of like Apple and Next again, right?
You know,
they had a hard time getting there, but once they clarified that strategy, people, it may have been a bitter pill for certain people to swallow, but it made perfect sense. You know,
well, imagine people who really like Next.
Well, right, you know, you took the best, most successful strategy you could, and you applied it to the pressures that were in the market at the time, and you went ahead. But I think what they need to be very careful of is they got a couple of challenges. One, they've got to persist the dual platform support, or they're going to lose the .NET camp to Microsoft. I mean, I don't think it's even a question.
Yes, definitely.
It's very expensive for people who have invested in the Microsoft platform, which I will have to say, I've been a registered Apple developer since 97. We deal with Java, we deal with all sorts of things. I'm not like the, you know, bleed blue type person, but I will say that Microsoft gives us the tools to easily develop things, and I'm not necessarily saying that the developers themselves do a phenomenal job in all cases, because sometimes if it's too easy, it's very easy to make bad products, but
that's true.
You can do some things that make it very easy for us to get value add applications to the market very quickly, and we've got an investment in that suite. If you turn off our ability to integrate with .NET hosted portlets, or in some cases even to use customizations that are written in .NET, you're forcing me to not only invest in a completely parallel development suite and a completely different set of languages, but you're forcing me to basically stop my development in order to do so.
Right.
And I think if they dropped that, they'd basically just be saying, hey, here's a ticket, go talk to Microsoft, because there's really no motivation for me to stick around.
Exactly. I think cross-platform support is no question, even though it's a new thing for BEA. I have no doubt that they'll continue the cross-platform support, both for the platform itself, for the portal, and also for the integration products, so anytime you write a portlet. What I'm more concerned about is WebLogic portal customers versus Aqualogic customers.
Well, that's an interesting point, too, because I would like to see a very clear vision of how those, I mean, in many ways, some of what they produce is parallel in concept, and I think as long as the concepts continue to be parallel, if there's some moving parts you have to deal with and fix, I'm okay with that to a degree, but I think that they really have a, let's say that they eventually sunset one of the other individual portal, like the portal tier products. One of the things I'd like to see is a clear, easy upgrade path, because again, basically what they're facing with that is parallel to what the Microsoft thing would be is, it's not an upgrade anymore. It's a full migration, and this is something we faced when we even upgraded from 4.0 to 6.0.
Right.
If you have such a radical change in administration and underlying technology, you really are going to have to make it a they're going to have to provide compelling reasons for the customer base to stick around, because effectively what you're doing is you're giving them a parity shift to what can conveniently be an alternate platform. In the case of something like an Oracle as well,
right?
I mean, Oracle has very strong vertical alignment with the rest of their suites. I mean, you mentioned, you know, Oracle buys everything. Well, they have 4 of the 5 HRMS systems.
That's true.
BEA doesn't. I mean, they may have a very flexible, very fluid solution, but ultimately, when you're talking to somebody in a financial arena, you're going to have a very compelling reason for me to stick around if you're going to make it expensive for me to deal with it. I'm not saying that they're going to, but I just think it's something they should keep in mind.
That's so true. You know, I think one of the core differences is one of culture, and that is because Plumtree as a company always sold to the business,
right?
Whereas BEA as a company, I think, sells to IT. Now, I mean, that's a very broad statement, and I may come to regret it later, but the truth is, I feel that way. I mean, I feel like BEA is very IT-focused, and I think the dollars are in the business, not in IT. And I think Plumtree is going to have to adapt to this whole model of selling to IT, and BEA is going to have to adapt a bit to this whole model of selling to the business.
Well, the people who pay the checks tend to make a very strong case for why they should have a lot of say, and I think if you fail to produce an engaging argument for why they should invest, it's a done deal. I mean, you're not going to get it. And I think that recently somebody posted a very interesting blog discussion post on the Dev2Dev site that was talking about, you know, knowing 3 languages and the CIO and all that. And it's very true. You've got to be able to produce results. And I think if you fail to produce those in a way that are repurposable to the business community, you're never going to get mindshare. And as a result, you're never going to get the cash.
True. Absolutely true. So I guess that pretty much is a wrap. I'm really glad you were able to join us.
Thanks for having me,
Eric, for being on our show. Once again, this is Eric Whitley, a friend of the Plumtree community, longtime customer, and contributor to the Dev2Dev forums, as you all know. So thank you again, Eric.
Thanks, Chris.
And we'll see you at BEA World.
Yep. Talk to you then, man.
All right.
Well, that just about does it for this week's podcast. Thanks a lot for joining us, and please remember, stop by our booth at BEA World. It's booth 527, located just off the corner of the main BEA exhibit, and we look forward to seeing you there. In the meantime, enjoy Plumtree.